Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the 48th episode of the Calcio Land Podcast. I'm joined by Alex Goldberg, our great producer, co-host, and yesterday solo host with a fantastic podcast on all the best prospects in Europe. Alex, great job. I really enjoyed that podcast. I learned a ton. I hope some of our listeners did too. So everyone, if you missed that episode, definitely check it out. A lot of great stuff. But let's catch up, though, with everything that's happening in the Champions League. And then after we talk about that, we're going to preview the Serie A weekend. So, Alex, were you able to watch any of the Champions League matches this week?
I sure did, David. And by the way, thank you for the kind words regarding the podcast. It was certainly a thrill. On Tuesday, I watched my favorite, and I stress favorite, Serie A team, David. Napoli with a strong 3-1 win against Feyenoord. Three goals scored by the three amigos, Cajon, Mertens, and my boy Lorenzo Insigne. Good performance from Napoli, much needed after their disappointing result against Shakhtar the first week of the Champions League. I also watched on replay, can't be in two places at the same time, but I watched Borussia Dortmund, Real Madrid. Great matchup on paper. Proved to be a pretty good match in real life. But very clear, Real Madrid is the better team. Even though they are struggling in La Liga, when the bright lights are on, they deliver. Gareth Bale with a golazo. Ronaldo is great. I was going to kind of use it as a test to see where Borussia Dortmund's at. They're doing very well in the Bundesliga. They're a fun, young, exciting side. But very clear that Real Madrid is still miles ahead of them. But now it's time to get to it. On Wednesday, Chelsea just sent me into another stratosphere with happiness. Honestly, I'm not being biased. I haven't seen a team boss, and yes, boss Atletico Madrid like that in a long, long time. Right from the get-go, Chelsea was the better side. Eden Hazard finally getting to start with Alvaro Morata. He was electric right when the game started. If it wasn't for David Luiz's shenanigans causing a penalty to go to Atletico Madrid and Griezmann putting it home, when if he didn't put home that penalty, he really was not good at all. Chelsea was the better team throughout. Diego Simeone said it himself. But the fashion that they won with Michy Batshuayi getting a walk-off. I mean, if you follow any baseball, you can hit a walk-off home run, game's over. In the NBA, you can hit a buzzer beater. But it's very hard to get a walk-off in football, and it was a walk-off. Michy Batshuayi puts it in. The ref blows the whistle. Chelsea gets 3 points in Madrid. All right, I'm getting too excited, but it was phenomenal. Antonio Conte, great job managing. Had Morata and Hazard connect for the first goal. Then as they got tired, completely switched them out for Willian and Batshuayi, helping to make the winning goal. Great job, Conte. Great job, Chelsea. I'm still over the moon about it. So that's what I watched. How about you, David?
So I got to be honest. Yesterday, unfortunately, I was at an all-day conference, so I wasn't able to watch too much of yesterday's games. I caught the highlights, read a bunch to get ready for the podcast. I definitely watched Napoli, very, very intriguing match there. We're going to get to them a little bit more with the winners and losers. Definitely caught a little bit of Roma, a little bit of Juve, and I read up on all the Chelsea stuff. So very, very impressive stuff. Do better than I did with the Champions League matches.
Well, life happens, life gets in the way, but I would not have been able to excuse myself if I missed that glory day for Chelsea. All right, David, well, obviously a lot happened this week, and I know you're prepared. So who are the winners and losers of episode 48 of the Calcio Land podcast?
So let's start with the ones that I actually was able to watch. I've trashed them a lot on the podcast, so shout out to all those who say that on Twitter. I only say nice things about Serie A players, but one player I haven't been afraid to criticize here on the podcast is a Napoli goalkeeper, Reina, but he's definitely a winner. With that penalty save, a match was still kind of yet to be decided when he did. I thought that was really important. Napoli really needs him to get his act together. So if this, solidifies his confidence and he does better, I'm all for it. I'm kind of rooting for Napoli to win Serie A this season. So that would be great. And you mentioned the three amigos on Napoli, Callejon. To me, I feel that between Insigne, who's the hometown hero at Napoli, Dries Mertens, his amazing goal-scoring ability, I feel like Callejon kind of gets lost a little bit in the shuffle. I feel, though, his work rate, his tactical intelligence is one of the reasons why Sarri's Napoli looks so good. Then for Roma, this was their first win away in the Champions League in 7 years. It wasn't pretty. They barely snuck by Karabag, but good for Di Francesco getting the first win away for Roma in the Champions League after 7 years. Dzeko had another goal. He's been terrific. Another couple of winners. Bentancur on Juve, last minute sub for Pjanic, who got hurt. Looks like he'll miss a couple games. Bentancur continues to be really impressive when given a chance. And definitely to me, a big winner is Higuain. I said it on Monday. All of you that want to sell your Higuain stock cheaply, I'll gladly buy it. I think he's going to really go on a roll now. And, credit to Allegri for benching him. I think he needed a little bit of a mental break, a little bit of motivation maybe, and it seems to have worked. And then, of course, we have to mention your two people on Chelsea, Morata. How is it not surprised? Anyone who's followed him is not surprised. Big Champions League game against a team that always does well in the Champions League, and Morata rose to the occasion. Not the least bit surprised. And shout out to Conte. We've talked about it on the podcast. I think, he gets a bad rap in the Champions League. He's only was in the Champions League twice. Everyone remembers the Galatasaray debacle. I'm not minimizing it. That was really, really poor. But the first season, Conte in the Champions League did well, and you can point out that he was suspended. But that really wasn't a big factor. He was coaching the team during the week. He was picking the lineup. He was making the adjustments at halftime during some of the home games. He was probably even going in the locker room with the players, so they'll make a big deal out of that. I just think Conte, the sample size so small in the Champions League that we can't say he's bad at it. To me, at the Euro with Italy, he showed he can manage very well in a tournament. So big win for him yesterday. Now, as far as the losers, we have quite a bit. Ancelotti, of course, who was sacked. We're going to get into it a little bit more with the questions. Look, there's no way around it. He really didn't do well at Bayern Munich. He had issues with a lot of the senators, the key players on the team, but the results just weren't there. I think Ancelotti leaving puts even more pressure on Montella. I just watched a little bit of Milan in the Europa League. Really uninspiring performance. Now with Ancelotti gone, there's going to be even more pressure on him. Montella also, in a very odd way, sacked his longtime collaborator Marra, who handled the athletic preparation on the team. He's been working with him for over 8 years. To me, he seemed a little bit like a sacrificial lamb. We have to fire someone, so he got rid, or the club got rid of one of his key collaborators. But Montella is starting to look in trouble. Another loser. This really isn't Champions League related, but Inter, who's always had lack of depth at center back to start the season anyway, their highly rated prospect Zinho Van Houten, who is probably after Ranocchia their next in line to be backup, he tore his ACL. So to me, this is more Inter's lack of depth might come back to bite them. Now, someone who's definitely a winner, especially this week, is our great friend, Thousand Names in Italy. Last week, really amazing predictions, was 3 for 3. And what's incredibly impressive, he nailed exactly Fiorentina Atalanta 1-1. He was perfect on Sampdoria Milan 2-0. He had Juve winning. He only had it 1-0, but he went 3 for 3. I think in soccer, let's call it European football, it's harder than picking an NFL because it's not just win losses, withdraws. So congratulations to him. There's a lot. I put a lot of pressure on him this week. So without further ado, let's get into his predictions. I'm also going to use this as an opportunity to preview a little bit the matches in Serie A this weekend. So, as usual, we're going to do these in Italian and English. We're going to throw a bone to our listeners in Italy who are dying to hear what Thousand has for us this week. So, the first match he has is Udinese Sampdoria. He's predicting a 2-2 result. goals by Quagliarella. He has some scoring a brace. Quagliarella off to a great start this season. And goals, to me, Udinese's attacking line is very odd with Lasagna and Lopez, two older guys. Maybe they should have just kept Thoreau, but he has them both scoring. By now, you guys know that Thousand has a lot of conspiracy theories. He thinks kind of the fix is in this match to keep Del Neri his job. But he also says we're going to see once again Sampdoria play a beautiful style of football. So this is the prediction in Italian. Udinese Sampdoria 2-2, Quagliarella 2 gol, Lasagna Lopez, Brodino per Del Neri che evita l'esonero, come gioca la squadra di Giampaolo. Next one, very intriguing match. Juve traveling to Bergamo to face Atalanta. So Thousand has Juve winning 3-1. Again, another conspiracy. Goals by Higuain, Cristante, and a brace for Dybala. And here's Thousand's conspiracy theory. In exchange for Orsolini, Caldara, and Spinazzola, Atalanta's going to mail this in and let Juve win. Of course, those are three owned Juve players. And Thousand also points out that Atalanta manager Gasperini is going to be rooting for Juve. Some of you may not know, Gasperini used to coach Juve's a top youth team a long time ago. And the last one, this is kind of a shocking prediction. I'm surprised. The big match of the weekend, Milan-Roma. Thousand has Milan winning 2-0 with two goals by Kalinic. Interesting to me, I noticed today on Twitter a lot of Milan fans praising Kalinic because Cutrone and Andre Silva, as good as they've been individually, really don't pass to each other. They don't seem to have much chemistry at all. And I see a lot of people pointing out that at least Kalinic tries to play with his other striker up front. So a Thousand thinks Kalinic is going to score two goals, and he's like, VAR is going to save Montella. So maybe another conspiracy here. And Thousand also points out that new Roma manager, Di Francesco, doesn't know much about football. And he considers these are two teams that are overrated, in his words. So in Italian, we have Milan-Roma 2-0, Kalinic doppietta, il VAR dà una mano a Montella, Di Francesco di calcio sa poco, due squadre sopravvalutate. I didn't read the previous one in Italian, and that was Atalanta-Juve 1-3, Higuain-Cristante Dybala 2 gol, in cambio di Orsolini, Caldara e Spinazzola, l'Atalanta si scansa ancora, Gasperini, tifa Juve. So those are three of the bigger match of the week. A couple of others that I wanted to highlight. Napoli's playing at home against Cagliari. Interestingly, we talked about it on Monday. They might face their former striker, Pavoletti, who isn't fully fit, but we talked about on Monday how Napoli, after Milik's injuries, once again, a little bit, doesn't have much depth up front. Pavoletti, though, won't be in the match. And it's the early game on Sunday. I have a feeling Sarri is going to be complaining about the lunchtime match. I love Sarri, but he really loves to complain all day long on anything that he can. Other matches to look for, Inter's traveling to Benevento. On paper, that should be a fairly easy win for them. Let's see how that goes, because they need a convincing win. We have Lazio playing at home against Sassuolo. Sassuolo off to a terrible start to the season, so a lot of pressure on them. Lazio on a good roll. Let's see if they can win that match. And then there's a big match for me in the race to avoid relegation. I kind of see six teams involved in this. I see Benevento and Hellas Verona as the two worst, but two teams competing to avoid being in the last spot are Spal and Crotone, who are going to be playing each other this weekend. So those are the matches to look for. So great stuff from Thousand. Went 3-0 last weekend. Let's see if he can keep it up. So, Alex, other people who are always winners are the people that send us in Twitter questions with the CalcioLand hashtags. And which ones are we going to go over today?
All right, well, let's start with the hot, fresh news. David, can you see Ancelotti taking over from Montella during the season? And what about replacing Ventura on the Italian national team?
So this is a lot to digest with Ancelotti. Honestly, I was kind of a little bit surprised that Bayern, who's so methodical and whatnot, decided to sack him so early. So I have to really digest this news. So what I figured we'd do today, where next week we'll get into it a little bit more. We also need to see how Montella does against Roma this weekend. I think tonight's match in the Europa League doesn't really help his cause. Before the match, Milan director Fassone kind of dismissed all the Ancelotti rumors, saying, oh, we're focused on Montella. He's just as good. He's younger. You can make of that statement what you will. You know, I don't put much stock in those statements. But here are the facts and what I would look at so far with Ancelotti at Milan. If you want him there, on the positive side, once in his career, he took over a team midseason. He did that at PSG. I think this is what after he had been sacked at Chelsea. So not unprecedented for him to take over midseason somewhere. Obviously, we all know about his great ties to Milan, but on the flip side, Ancelotti has turned down a return to Milan before. He did it when there was Berlusconi and Galliani. So on one hand, you can say, look, the project is more exciting now. Maybe he didn't have faith in Berlusconi and Galliani. And there's certainly some truth to that. The flip side to that is he has really close ties to Berlusconi and Galliani. He really doesn't have ties to this new ownership group. So, you know, those is kind of how I see the positive and the negatives if you want him to go there. As far as him replacing Ventura on the Italian national team, I'd love to see that, to be honest. I think Ancelotti is older. I think it's hard. Conte is kind of a rarity. Even Carlo Garganese, I think, pointed it out that a young coach who's really, really good ending up on the Azzurri is rare. Ancelotti is kind of in the age frame to be on the Azzurri. The problem is the Italian Federation gave Ventura a two-year extension not that long ago. I doubt they're going to replace him before the World Cup. So an interesting situation. We're going to get into Ancelotti more next week. I'm going to bring in a guest who can kind of enlighten us on the situation a little bit more. But this is kind of how I see the landscape now. I don't see it as a slam dunk that he's going to Milan if Montella sacked. I won't dismiss it either. I just need to think about it a little bit more.
My knee-jerk reaction is Thomas Muller must be loving this news. He clearly was not that happy under Ancelotti, and before Ancelotti came, he was scoring a lot more goals, so we'll see how that shakes out. All right, is Dries Mertens likely to leave Napoli, and would winning the Scudetto help keep him?
It's a great question, and, you know, I've talked about how I hate transfer rumors this time of year because so much can change, but there are some factors with Mertens that I wanted to include it in today's podcast. For one, I have to be honest, I thought Mertens was going to leave in the summer because he's older, and I thought Napoli had enough depth up front, and this was when Milik was coming back from the injury, and you were like, oh, okay, maybe Napoli is going to cash in after a great season. They didn't. I think that has to do because they're going all in for the Scudetto. Now, the other factor to me that's really interesting about Mertens is he recently signed an extension, and in that extension, there is an exit clause. When I tell you the amount, I think you're going to fall out of your chair, Alex. It's only $30 million, but keep in mind, this exit clause is only valid next year, and by next summer, Mertens will be 31. So, older player. So, you know, keep that in mind. And it's, you know, I'm sure plenty of clubs would love to pay that amount. But of course, Mertens would also have to agree to leave. It's not just that someone can pay the clause and off he goes. He'd have to agree to that. And Mertens has a lot of ties to Napoli. He seems to really love it there. Last year, when it seemed he could leave, it was more offers from China. But I think the way he's played, like some Premier League team or some top team in Europe is going to want to pay him. So an interesting situation. Almost in a way, I think that winning the Scudetto might be the perfect time for him to leave on top. So an interesting situation. Like, again, I don't like talking about transfer rumors this time of year, but there's enough factors that I think people should chew on these facts and make of that what they may.
If I'm Napoli, I try my absolute hardest to keep Mertens. I continue to have the shortest front three of all time. But then I signed Peter Crouch as the backup striker. All right, moving on. Who do you see Spalletti using in the Trequartista role since João Mário has really struggled?
It's a good question. So I've read a little bit on this. For one, it seems that Joao Mario is going to start this weekend against Benevento, a very easy opponent. He needs to do well. We've talked about it on the podcast. I mean, the range of performances from him is really shocking. You know, one minute he looks amazing. The next match looks like an absolute donkey. It's just kind of hard to predict. I personally think he's a great weapon off the bench, but it looks like he's going to start this weekend. There are some alternative. Brozovic, I think, has shown some flashes. I think he's a talented player that could strive under Spalletti. There's been talk that Spalletti could move Candreva to the trequartista role because of what we saw from Caramo over the weekend. I think Candreva's work rate, I don't know if I do that. I see some value in the way that he plays on the wing. But that's a possibility as well. You can also play Borja Valero more up front and have Vecino and Gagliardini play together in the back and Borja and Joao Mario off the bench. So an intriguing option there, but looks like Joao Mario will get another game as a starter in that role, and he needs to make the most of it, that's for sure.
He's consistently inconsistent, you could say. Okay, which center back outside of Italy would be a good addition for Inter in the January window?
So we mentioned it earlier that they're after Ranocchia, their other top backup now tore his ACL. So I think they're definitely going to look at this. And the two logical places to look at the two center backs they were pursuing at the end of the summer window, that's in the Premier League, Mustafi and Mangala. Let's see if they can bring either to Italy. I'm sure there'll be plenty of other names there. Again, I don't like to speculate too much transfers this time of year, but their lack of depth, and now with the injury, they'll definitely look there. So let's see if they go back to the names that they went at the end of the window or if there are other options for them, but I definitely expect them to make a move in that role.
All right, let's move to the old lady. Straight up, who is better between Rugani and Benatia?
So I was asked this question a couple of weeks ago, and I kind of wanted to wait for a longer sample size and kind of see what I think. So I'll tell you right now, I'm going to be honest, I'm not that high on Rugani compared to a lot of other people. I think, you know, young prospects, and he played a lot at Empoli and showed some flashes there, and then he was at Juve, he understudied all these great center backs. Like, I'm a big believer that with prospects, they're like a blank canvas. You can project anything you want on them, good or bad. There's not much of a sample size to judge him. You know, I think he's okay. I'm not that crazy about him. I thought at the last year, under 21 Euro, Caldara, who Juve also owns, vastly outplayed him in that tournament. If I had to take between Caldara and Rugani, no doubt about it, I'm taking Caldara. Also, interestingly, Allegri never plays Rugani in the Champions League, plays him in Serie A. Benatia, on the other hand, he hasn't been playing well for Juve. He's had injuries this season. I think he's really struggled. Yesterday, we saw Barzagli and Chiellini start in a match that Juve had to win after they lost the first match to Barcelona. I'm going to say this, though. If Rugani turns into becoming the player Benatia was at Udinese and Roma, when Benatia was one of the best center backs in Italy, I'd be surprised, but that means that he's developed a lot. So kind of hard to say at this exact moment who's better. I hope for Rugani's sake, though, he can develop in the Benatia that we saw at Roma and Udinese, not the version at Juve.
Okay, very interesting Twitter question here. Is Dybala to Neymar what Del Piero was to the Brazilian Ronaldo?
Yeah, so this is a great question from one of our very loyal listeners, and he asked me to make sure we specified that he's basically saying that Neymar and the Brazilian Ronaldo were a notch better than Dybala and Del Piero. Shout out to him. I know he's a Juve fan, so at least he recognized that. So I'm going to say that it's too soon to tell. Like, Neymar's done it, you know, in the Champions League at the top level. He's the man now at PSG, kind of in the way that Dybala now is at Juve with the number 10 jersey. I think there were more expectations for a while on Neymar. He's been transferred twice for huge transfer fees. Dybala had one big transfer. So an interesting question. I just think it's too soon to tell. A couple of thoughts, though, on Del Piero and the Brazilian Ronaldo. Like, I have to say, you know, the best players that I saw in my lifetime, you know, Maradona, Messi, prime Zidane, I think, though, had the Brazilian Ronaldo stayed healthy and didn't fall in love with eating and whatnot, he would have been hands down the best player that I ever saw. In his absolute peak, he was really, really incredible. I also would have loved to see what Del Piero would have done without that knee injury he suffered against Udinese back in 97 or 98. I think he really may have gone another level after that. So a good question as far as Dybala and Neymar. Let's see in the next few years. I think right now, if you had to pick one, you'd probably take Neymar, though.
Okay. David, which European competition is a better litmus test for a league between the Champions League and the Europa League?
This is another very good question. And I was thinking about this. I think it's a little bit hard to tell because part of me feels that in the Champions League, like you might have a little bit of the top-heavy leagues. Of course, we've seen Juve make two out of the three finals, but the other Serie A teams like really stinking it up for a while. So it's a little bit interesting to say. I think in the Europa League, you kind of see a little bit more the depth of certain leagues, and you also see, you know, which teams really value, and at a certain extent, which leagues really value European competitions. Like historically, Italian teams don't seem to care that much about the Europa League. There's a little bit more interest from them ever since it became that if you won it, you went to the Champions League. So it's a great question. I'm still going to say the Champions League is a better litmus test. I think the Europa League, though, gives you a better idea about the depth in the league.
All right, fair enough. All right, David, the last Twitter question, and it's a doozy. What is your favorite Italian dish, and how does Italian food in Boston compare to food you get in Italy?
Yeah, it's a great question. I want to end on this. Like, I grew up in Italy. I go back every year. My wife's Italian, although I think I'm married to the only Italian woman who's really adverse to cooking. But my mother-in-law is a great cook. And, you know, when she comes here to Boston, like, I like to take her to the best Italian restaurants here to impress them. And I'll say overall, I think the big difference is in Italy, the best Italian food isn't necessarily at the big name restaurants. You want to go to like the little trattoria, especially if they don't give you a menu and they just tell you this is what we have today. That's when you know a place is really good, like maybe a handwritten menu that changes, or they'll just tell you, you know, you tell us what we like and we'll hook you up. That's when you know you're in a great place. In Italy. Here in the U.S., I feel like more you have to go to the higher end places to eat well. I'm going to give a shout out to a few restaurants that I really like here in Boston. And I think, Alex, you're going to see one commonality between all of them. To me, the absolute best place to eat Italian food in Boston, and probably in all the U.S., at least that I've tried, is this place, Reno's in East Boston. Really incredible. It's been on the Food Network quite a bit. Another great place by South Station is Nebo, a very, very good restaurant. I actually walked by here today, and who did I see sitting there? Roma owner Palotta. His two sisters own the place there. When Roma comes here in Boston every summer, they always go there. Very good place. Another place, and this is where you and I actually met to discuss doing this podcast way back when, Pasta mm-hmm. Beach, terrible name, very good food by Aquarium. And the last place that I love, this is more in the Seaport area, is Babbo, owned by Mario Battalli, who I think is the absolute best Italian cook here in the U.S. And all these places, what do they have in common? They're not in the North End, which is the Italian neighborhood in Boston. No offense to those places. I think it's a tourist trap. It's very rare that you get great food. If you're in Boston and you're looking for Italian food, I'd go to one of those places. As far as what my favorite dishes are, I think what's great about Italian food is simplicity. That's really what makes it great. I love pizza margherita. If I go to a place, I don't want the fancy pizza with all the toppings. I really judge a pizza joint by the margherita. I also love pasta carbonara. It's like having bacon and eggs with pasta, and then I'm a big fan of the cold cut dishes and whatnot, and the cheeses. I think that's what makes it great. So those are mine. Alex, what are your favorite Italian dishes?
Wow, putting me on the spot here. Well, the easy answer and true answer would be anything made by my better half's mother. She is a wizard in the kitchen. Or if we're talking simplicity, you can't go wrong with a nice chicken parm. So chicken parm, or anything that she makes.
Excellent. Okay. So, Alex, you did a fantastic job yesterday. You're becoming really, really a great host. I have a feeling in a few months you're going to have your own podcast, a crushing mine. Well, great job. Everyone check out what you did yesterday. I learned a ton. And thank you to all our listeners for the great questions. I have to run to the Roger Waters show tonight. Yesterday, I missed a lot of the games because I was at a work conference. So do me a favor, keep pushing the podcast, keep retweeting it, keep leaving reviews. So maybe someday I won't have to have the day job and I can just focus on this. So thank you to everyone that's listening, and we'll talk to you next week.